One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Podcast, otherwise known as The Graphic, otherwise known as Lawrence McKenna and Jamie Slevin, sitting down and having a nice chat. Good to have you.
Good to be here, Lawrence.
Thanks a lot for coming along because a lot is going on in the world of football. I want to preface this with, yes, it's easy to criticise Manchester United at the moment, but the headline that broke today on The Guardian, it's got it in front page as well, so it feels like something that's quite important to me. We've got a bit of this, but we will cover some other things as well, some of the other ridiculous people, ridiculous results, ridiculous things happening. But Manchester United are open to offers for Casemiro, Sancho, Varane, Martial, Van de Beek, or any of the others. And they're basically, it seems like this is a headline, but it isn't. Does that make sense? Like, if you'd have told me privately and not put it in an article, I've gone, yeah, of course.
Yeah, the new owner's coming in. That's yeah. Selling Martial was his like rallying cry.
Selling Sancho is his rallying cry. Selling Casemiro is his rallying cry. Selling Varane is his rallying cry. Van de Beek is a bit of a crazy one for me because I'm like, weren't you like the perfect Erik ten Hag player at one point? But I guess it just is. We'll talk about Van de Beek in a second. But are these not all rallying cries? Are these not all just, you know, the new owner getting his feet under the table and going, cool, I'm just going to clear house?
Yeah, and it buys him some time too.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you say, hey guys, what went before was a real issue. Mm. Well, now you're in the market of saying, we need to build from the ground up. Mm-hmm. But I got to tell you, I think that football club will feel better as an internal environment if you did lose like three or four unhappy players.
Yeah, and on top of that as well, I think it's about losing unhappy players in the moment, short-term pain, long-term gain, or all these kind of, you know, truisms. But Varane's kind of come in and done a good job, right? He's done a good job as a centre-back. I think he was very solid for a while.
And Casemiro last year was good too.
He was absolutely, I think for the position they were asking him to play, I think he fulfilled that position very well. But that's kind of beyond the point now. During a rebuild, you're not just going to put down a blueprint day one and go, it's not like building a house, if that makes sense. Like Casemiro, Varane, those two particularly stand out to me because they look like, Here's what I imagine. There is this thing in London that happens at the moment where someone buys a very old building and then they keep the facade, but the whole of the inside of the building is gutted.
Yeah.
Varane and Casemiro are the struts that are pushing back against that wall and going, we'll keep it here whilst you build. And then when you then put the internal structure in and you know what you're going to build, you take the struts away.
So here's my question. Would you not want to keep them around?
No.
Even if they were playing less football.
Well, Varane wants to play more football, I'd imagine. Right. And I would also imagine there is an offer for Varane on the table from somewhere where he can make some more money, probably play some more football. And he's also in a year where he'll want to be competing to get into the Euro squad. Am I wrong? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's very much in the conversation.
Yeah, Casemiro obviously not playing in the Euros, but Sancho would love to play in the Euros. Donny van de Beek, probably not an option. And Martial, probably not an option. But these guys are just sort of sticking around. I'm surprised there weren't names such as Maguire and McTominay on there, but they seem fairly evident as well.
But isn't football interesting? Because a month ago, or 6 weeks ago, before McTominay and Maguire came back in, they were like the first ones on the out list.
But they still, yeah.
And now there seems to be a little bit more love for them.
I think maybe because maybe there's been some reparation done there. Maybe there has been some people sitting down and going, look, like you're still a good, maybe their agents kind of sat down with them and going, look, you're going to get the best value for the club and you're going to get the best value for your contract at your next club. If you're playing, you're affable and you're easy.
And Ten Hag has also probably found that what he's known from last year has worked. Lindelof and Maguire was their best partnership last year.
100%.
And has been their best partnership this year. And McTominay, who obviously was great. Do you remember when Casemiro came in and Ten Hag didn't play him? Mm-hmm. He kept McTominay in the side. And everyone knew eventually McTominay was going to drop out. Mm-hmm. Well, he's gone back to him and he's done great.
And I get it. But like, again, it's kind of, you know, there's multiple different managers that you can look at where they've had to clear house. And in the short term, they've had to make alliances that they then ended up dissolving. And a lot of these were alliances that I'd imagine in the summer, Ten Hag was looking at dissolving. You know, Casemiro, obviously, is a fantastic player at his very peak and also now. But if you're Erik Ten Hag, you're looking at him going, well, it's not about being surplus to requirements. It's not about, or there are going to be loads of different evaluative structures by which he probably should stay at Manchester United. But if you're looking beyond just the superficial of, are you a good player and therefore could you play for a good club? Then there are better options than Casemiro now. Or at least there will be better options that are available to Manchester United.
There's one other thing about those names you listed. Big wages.
Huge. I mean, 300k a week. The midfielder and defender each earn more than 300 grand a week and are in their 30s.
And Sancho's got big sell-on value even now.
Sancho could give them... I mean, where would you... The problem is, how many people are going to come in and go, we'll give you pounds on the pound.
Sure.
It's pennies on the pound for Sancho. I think probably got to accept to leave, which
I think if they got a £40 million bid for Sancho, they'd be tempted. But they might also say, no, hang on. He's much better than 40 million quid. He's 50 million quid. And that's a discount.
What's the highest level team you'd sell him to? And if a Premier League team came along, do you think they'd sell Sancho? I don't think they can sell Sancho to another Premier League side.
I can see, this is so like Black Mirror football. I can see Chelsea going in for him. I don't say that because I actually can see Chelsea. I'm more just sort of saying.
No, I get that.
Narratively.
They'll be used in the
bidding
make
war.
Waiting.
Correct. Yeah.
What about, I mean, Real Madrid won't, but at one point Real Madrid were allegedly interested in him, probably just because Manchester United were and just because Dortmund go, you know, Madrid are interested.
Well, you know, the other suggestion that I've heard is Borussia Dortmund.
What, back?
Yeah. Well, the idea being that German football suits him a lot. It's the Bundesliga is very transitional. And on top of that, he's kind of just spent 2 years being unhappy and they loved him there. So there's some, I've read something around like, well, are they going to loan him and get him playing again, get him fit with the look of then maybe United selling him on? I mean,
actually,
the name that came
that.
To mind is Newcastle. I don't know that they're in the market necessarily for a winger.
You know, I don't know if they're not though. Like who's, so on the weekend, they
you
were...
have Anthony Gordon and Almiron, but maybe not a huge amount outside of that.
Who do they have as a backup there? Like, I'm not really sure they've got many backups, but I wouldn't... Anthony Gordon's not really... I mean, Anthony Gordon starts in that position on the team sheet, but could you put Sancho there? Gordon's a bit more central. Like, if you look at Gordon's average position, all those kind of things, maybe I'm completely wrong.
It's also worth saying, they play Joe Linton out there sometimes, which was not
I love Joe Linton out there. Yeah, by the way, yeah, Anthony Gordon plays sort of inside forward. He's probably also the most progressed player in them in terms of their average touches.
The question, too, is whether... Eddie Howe would look at somebody like Sancho and say, hey, Joe Linton was a laughing stock when I came in.
I made him.
I changed him. Also, Sancho just needs some love, presumably.
Is that, by the way, is that, okay, I get that. And this is kind of the point I was getting back to with Van de Beek, and, or is it Van de Beek, one or the other. And you say the same for Joe Linton, possibly Anthony Gordon, probably Sancho. Bad fit, just bad fit for what they want. Like, good fit when he signed. Bad fit when you tried it.
What about, I mean, let's just talk about Newcastle for a second. could they not look go down that list and go, Van de Beek might be worth a punt. Sancho might be worth a punt.
Varane.
Oh, Varane is a fascinating one.
I think Varane's...
I don't think he wants to go...
You've kind of got to weigh up the difference between playing for France and playing in Saudi.
Yeah, the other thing is they have obviously Botman, who will play. So there is a place for him next to Botman.
A lot of injuries, eh?
Yeah, I mean, there's a place for him there. Whether Newcastle can afford it in the context of FPP is a different question.
FPP is a whole other thing.
And the only other comment just to really make on United there is whether they have, who makes the decisions as to the replacements?
I think it's going to be the new hierarchy that Sir Jim, as everyone is shortening it to, of Omega Corp or whatever you want to call it. It's called Ineos, just for people who are wondering. Will make these calls. And again, if you go back to where his Nice side are in Ligue 1, they won 2-1 on the weekend and they are second up to PSG.
It's not bad going.
They're competing pretty well as well. But they're above Monaco, they're above Lille, they're above everyone else who's struggling to compete in that league. And the thing is, I love the constitution of this Nice team. Even if you don't think they can win the league, there is still, when I went there to go see the side, there's still some kind of strands of, there's a rebuild that we can make here. You know, there are people within the squad and within the side that you go, I can see how that works. Like, you know, there's shades of Dante there. I think at one point they, there's a lot of injuries as well. Yeah, they've got a lot of people who are either injured or come off the bench and make quite a big impact. So they're a good team.
I mean, that's the other thing about Sir Jim. It's not just, new owner. It's an owner with a blueprint for the footballing side of things.
And clearly an identity which doesn't seem to be like just linked to let's just play nice football. It made me realize on the weekend how, I saw an interview with Fernando Torres. And Fernando, not to always take it back to Liverpool, but Fernando Torres said the club was rotten when I left Liverpool from the owners down and I knew we weren't going anywhere. As far as I'm concerned, there are many players probably looking at Manchester United who could get a payday at multiple different clubs who will not look at Manchester United and therefore Erik ten Hag with this going on there.
And the flip side of the same coin is there's plenty of players who are at United who have an inflated payday.
And
are kind of going, well, this is the best gig I'll ever have.
And won't let it go.
To
an extent, I know McTominay, we both said we thought McTominay, was it McTominay? Yeah, McTominay would be one of those people to keep around and just sort of be like, one of the old crew or like one of the originals.
He's also a bit of a cockroach. Like he survived under 5 managers.
So insulting, but it's so true.
In only the best way, right? Like you get these footballers who are sort of cockroaches and as far as like every manager ends up playing them, loving them. You go in not rating them, you end up rating them.
Was he, I just want to see how
he came
old.
Through Jose, with Jose.
Yeah, he did because Jose made him player of the season for Manchester United back in the day. Do you remember that? He's now 27 years old.
That's flown by, Christ.
That's flown by. And I still think of Scott McTominay, probably because he has quite a young face, but he is maturing, probably because you always think of him as youth. There's so many shades of other teams who've rebuilt and had someone young there at the time, and they just remain young forever. Where in Arsenal were rebuilding, it was Theo Walcott. Theo Walcott will always be young, not only because he looks young, but also because people want him to be young in order to fulfill his potential. McTominay was meant to be this kind of, Darren Fletcher type, but Darren Fletcher 2.0.
I think you could, he's not been on the level of Darren Fletcher.
No, but he's also not at the coaches of Darren Fletcher.
Exactly, all the side. And he has been very, very good for Scotland.
He has.
So
Scotland have been not great in that time, but yeah.
I would say that McTominay is probably one of like the great survivors. If you think about like all the bad players at Manchester United, and Martial is less of a survivor and more of a limper. Do you know what I mean? He's limped through contracts.
Yeah, and I guess at the same time has the, not the option, but like, He could always go back on the crutch of being a Manchester United stalwart, whereas Sancho's not that.
I read a criticism of Ten Hag this morning, which I liked, which was he spent 100 million on Onana and Mount.
Mm-hmm. I don't mind that.
And left the centre-forward situation being an unknown quantity with a bad back in coming to England and Martial. And when I read that, I thought, shit, that isn't enough.
Sure, but you need to fix one or the other first. And I think I'd rather fix the midfield and get movement up front than have, I mean, But that's available.
But that's presuming that Mount is a solution to the midfield.
I mean, I think broadly you cannot blame... I mean, you can maybe blame them for signing him in retrospect. I think at the time that was one of the signings of the summer.
No one questioned it at the time, really. No.
And even now it's hard to question because it's so soon.
Yeah, I think the problem is United just have looked toothless. And
he's barely played, though.
Who?
Mount.
Mount, yeah. Mm. I mean, the toothless isn't his fault.
Yeah.
But the fact that Martial starts a game up front for them in the week.
Right. Is horrific.
Is horrific.
I think it's also weird because I'd almost rather start with a false nine. And you know what's funny is I think that every time I hear you criticize a player,
yeah,
I think of what I would hear my Manchester United friend say to me,
yes,
in defense of, I have multiple Manchester United friends, but any of them will go, oh, well, it's not Martial's not the problem. It's all, we spoke about it on the podcast a few weeks ago, like false flag kind of
red
herrings. Problems, red herrings, yeah, or cover-up problems, where it's like, well, Martial's not the problem. Well, you know, McTominay's not really the problem. Well, you know, well, Varane's not the problem. Well, you know, Lindelof is part of the problem. He's not the problem. It's Onana that it is depends. One of many issues at the club.
It depends on the Malaise. Level of analysis. None of them are the problem, capital P. But you can see them as signs of the problem. So starting Martial up front in a Premier League game at this stage, when he signed in 2015.
Hugely problematic.
And this is where Ten Hag...
Been 8 years.
Oh, God. And the thing about Ten Hag is, like, he may not have had full control or wouldn't have had full control of the transfers. Despite what Gary Neville said, which was interesting.
Which was what?
Which was essentially, like, United don't have a system to stand up to managers. So the manager has a little bit of success initially, and then they get, which was Ten Hag's first year, and he was successful. Third trophy, perfect. And then they go, okay, I want this player and this player. And then they get sacked because the player's down tools. And then the next manager comes in and it's like, oh God, okay, we've only got like 2, 3, 4, 5 managers.
Different pieces.
And that's where, like, I just think if you're going to criticize Ten Hag, it's just impossible to know how much of the transfers are his fault and how much he didn't have a say in.
I also just think it's such a fruitless process to go, was this his fault? I think broadly you could look at any of his signings and go, yeah, seems fair enough. I mean, Mount and Onana for me, I think if any other Premier League team had signed them, if Liverpool had signed Mount and Onana,
they'd be good.
And we didn't have, you know, Alisson as an option right now. And the same with, I mean, I wanted Mount, Liverpool. Like, I think I did a whole video on it. I was like, Mount would be great. The only reason I didn't want him was his wages. And possibly his attitude, but that was all speculation.
What about Anthony?
Yeah, I don't want him at Liverpool. I've got Mo Salah sitting there. But there's also just other options. But that's why I think everyone was confused by the Anthony signing. He seems so weirdly specific to the role that he plays in an era when there are a whole load of people who do a lot of different things. That I was like, yeah, that is strange. But he doesn't seem to impede the team, does he? I don't think he does.
Not in an active way, but he also probably doesn't offer a huge amount in terms of impacting the game. So when you look at Anthony...
Unless it's direct.
But even direct, I mean, I would say like, you asked who could United have signed as a centre-forward. I don't know. I don't have a good suggestion. But Isak, for example, mm-hmm. went for less money than Anthony went for.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I mean, it was interesting too, because I saw a criticism of Chelsea saying, Colwill, Caicedo, Enzo Fernandez, and there was one more, all of whom have been poor this year. All four of whom would have been good somewhere else. Like, there's no doubt. The Colwill, if you put him in...
Manchester United, Liverpool. Put him in Liverpool.
Put him in Liverpool.
Liverpool, I mean, would have loved him.
Liverpool and Arsenal are probably quite a good litmus test of
City.
Moment. City, yeah. And then you just have to ask, to what degree is it the player's fault? To what degree is it the club set up not integrating them?
Sure. I don't think Chelsea... I mean, is shipping goals... I suppose shipping goals is Chelsea's issue. Their goal difference is zero. Liverpool's goal difference is plus 21. Villa's is plus 15. City's, even in fourth place, is plus 20. But I feel like teams aren't playing as conservatively this year. And broadly, Chelsea are still finding their defensive and offensive identity. And they've also, weirdly, like, you know, playing Everton right now is a nightmare.
Poch said today that their reality is mid-table. And
I love that as a comment, by the way.
Yeah, but it's over the last 18 months, it's been true. And their problem is they lack physicality. I read they're the smallest team in the league or the second shortest team in the league.
It's not Poch's fault.
Which is not Poch's fault. And the fact that he's come in and basically said, hey, you spent £1 billion. I don't like the squad. it lacks, I think he said, personality or strength or intensity.
Which is possibly one of the criticisms that people were making at the time. Individually, these look for like fantastic long-term acquisitions. But it's kind of the old Oakland Athletics thing of like, what do we pay these guys for? To get on base.
And they haven't
got on
base.
How many of them are getting on base?
Yeah, and this is where Gallagher, who I really like, people criticize Gallagher. I like Gallagher a lot.
He gets on base.
But he gets on base and he makes a big impact. And McTominay gets on base. Harry Maguire gets on base. Lindelof, in the last couple of months, has got on base.
Cole Palmer
has got on base. And then if you just look at like...
That's a poch signing, by the way, if ever there was one.
Oh, 100%.
Whereas Palmer's his Harry Kane.
Whereas Mudryk, for example, who I really like Mudryk. I like really...
Really?
I think he looks a bit aimless. He looks disconnected from his teammates, is the quote.
Yeah, I get that.
But there's so clearly a player who would be good in a side there. And he's walked into possibly the worst environment he could have done.
And it's not... And he seems like a good... He seems like he could work up a good relationship with Poch. Like he loved Arteta. Poch isn't a million miles off. I'm not saying, you know, they're the same, but I'm saying like they're both managers that operate on a certain level of, I don't want to say honour, but like kind of...
If you had signed for Brighton, we'd be described, you have Athletic articles by now saying, they'd be saying the secret weapon.
Yeah.
He comes off the bench in the 50th minute.
Right.
And he's got the most number of take-on. You know, you can just see that.
Narrative is very damning for a lot of these sides. And I feel like the short-termism of both Manchester United and Chelsea is extremely damning for both of them. But the long-term prospects with Sir Jim, with a new American owner in kind. I mean, he is an American owner, but I think he's kind of trying to be a bit different to other American owners at the same time being the same as other American owners. I think they are still hampered by... Roman Abramovich. I still think that is a ghost over this club that no one has addressed.
It also feels like a totally different club. I read they've got three players, Chilwell, James, and Thiago Silva, who were in the Champions League side, the one that's only a few years ago. That's a full change of players.
That was because they had a goalkeeper they didn't want, a home midfield they didn't want, like all these kind of things.
Totally.
What's weird about it is Reece James is a club captain. There was that tweet that went around the other day. He tweeted like, I'm back and we're only just getting started. Since then he's had like four matches, I think, or like something crazy low where he's just not started for any of them. I don't think it makes him a bad right back. But I do think if you're not consistently playing as a right back in the Premier League right now, you really struggle. And I think even if you do play consistently as a right back, we're seeing the right back area is somewhere that is constantly changing. I feel like that's like that might be the hardest position to play in the whole team right now, because you're expected to progress the ball, you're expected to defend the ball, and you're also sometimes expected to tuck inside and do whatever else. And you're probably going to have their trickiest, if not second trickiest player on you.
It's so true. In what other position, like also with Chelsea, especially under Tuchel, your job as the fullback was to be at the back post. Mm-hmm. And at times to tuck in.
Yeah.
Just one comment on James. I feel really sad about him because I think he's the best right back in the league, probably. At least the best rounded right back.
Because you're right. Good use of the word rounded.
He's probably, I think if you're looking at like ability on the ball, you probably look at Alexander Arnold, or you do. If you look at...
I still think Reece James, very high ability on the ball, just a
different
like
form
a different,
of it.
Yeah, like yeah. His graph, you put different attributes to make it big.
But the point is, I think he's a better defender than Kyle Walker. Or he's almost got the defending of Kyle Walker. He's almost got the on-the-ball stuff of Trent. He's as mobile as either of them. But if he can't stay fit...
It's the fitness thing.
It's
that
a
is
big
a real
shame.
Issue.
And like the thing is, he should be the first name on the team sheet for England.
I question at the moment... I think not being in the side, I think the same goes for Van de Beek. I think the same goes for Martial. I think the same goes for a number of players. And the same goes for most players who just know they're not going to play regularly and can pick up a check and can... I'm not saying this is Reece James or any of these guys, but I just think it's easy to... The only equivalent I can find is in America, people tank, where it's like, oh, we want to get the next draft pick so we don't need to play well. This is kind of equivalent to that for me in the UK, where it's like, okay, I'm not tanking, but I'm sort of at a big side, not where I can coast, but where I can... I'm relatively assured of my position, and for a little while, I'm here. I can drink, I can go out, I can go to parties, I can be whoever. And before you know it, what is a side hustle for you of being, you know, I can also party, becomes your main hustle. And that becomes...
And you're leveraging the brand of the team you play for.
Right.
In a way that, like, it's such an extreme example.
You should be the brand.
Yeah. Exactly. Like Manchester United Leeds.
That's pretty toxic corporately, but be the brand.
But you know, I know what you're saying. Mm. Whereas it becomes the tail wagging the dog. Whereas if you flip it, and this is the most extreme case I can think of, Andros Townsend worked super hard to get a short-term contract at Luton. Pay as you play, just Ross wants Barkley. To play football. Ross Barkley.
Although Ross Barkley is a very interesting example. I think Townsend and Barkley are maybe two men who live very different lifestyles. But yeah,
they're opposite ends of the spectrum on that front. But like, it's so clearly about the football. So
right.
Clearly. I mean, it's about nothing else.
I've got a theory and I might make a full video about it, but I don't know if it is a full video. So I think I need to just drop it on a podcast. Ross Barkley just came through at the wrong time. If Ross Barkley was coming through now, we would be going crazy for Ross Barkley. Either at Everton, because Everton might have sold him. He'd probably be at Newcastle or somewhere like that. He'd be Anthony Gordon of this era. But he came through in a post-Steven Gerrard, post-Frank Lampard. It wasn't really post-goals, but like, you get what I'm saying. Just after that era, when those guys were transitioning out of the league, when being Mr. Do-It-All was so key. And that's not really the role that Gerrard or Lampard would get in a modern team. You could argue, I struggle to see where Lampard fits in the modern side. I think he'd have to play like the 10-ish role, but I see where he plays, but I also struggle to see where he plays. I think Gerrard seems a lot more evident where he plays because he's got the full range of athleticism.
Mobility,
that's a good one. Although I would never describe Lampard as athletic. I would describe him as a good engine.
Such a different thing. Lampard would probably, like that whole licked run thing is so
timing.
Specific.
It's very Jude Bellingham.
Yeah, it's very Jude. I mean, maybe he could play, in fact, maybe the answer is
false nine.
He'd play like between the two strikers that aren't really strikers.
Right, I love that. And yeah. Which he kind of did for Chelsea under Carlo.
When it was 4-1-2-1-2.
Yeah.
And they had Anelka and Drogba.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically,
his job was just to hit the front, like hit. Right. Just a side note I read about him.
We did the analysis backwards there. I should have said at the start, he played between Anelka and Drogba and heroed him and not gone, I don't think he could do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of talking myself out of it. Sorry.
In The Mixer, mm-hmm. Michael Cox writes about Lampard.
By the way, The Mixer, amazing.
It's my most read book, I think.
Really? Yeah. Dogged?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And there's a bit in it which I really like about Lampard, where he intentionally hit the ball a bit scruffy. And the way he explained it was, when you hit a two pure at the edge of the box, it tends to hit the goalkeeper. Whereas Petr Cech used to really struggle, which is why Lampard quite often it felt like would hit it into the ground. You know the one, I don't know what you have in your mind's eye when you think about Lampard coming on to the edge of the box. It doesn't feel like Gerrard's.
No. But Gerrard is almost like
a different,
too pure.
Exactly. Whereas Lampard, in my mind, he hits it, kind of laces into the ground and skips into the bottom corner.
Yeah.
And that was intentional, which I thought.
Yeah, he like rolled in.
Yeah, which was interesting. The other thing I thought was interesting in terms of intentional is John Terry's penalty technique was intentional. The slip, he didn't mean to fall over, but the dragging the left leg slightly, standing foot was intentional.
So Ross Barkley would do really well at this point.
Well, you know, about the thing about Ross Barkley is if he came through now, we would just go, oh, aren't you a good footballer?
Are you a winger? He's probably a high wide winger now, isn't he?
He's probably not as, if he came through now, he wouldn't be as beefy. So now he's a little bit of like muscle in the midfield. But back then he wasn't. He was a little bit more skinny and a little bit more bouncy.
He definitely had shades of Rooney though, where it was sort of like, well, they feed you. Like, I get what you're saying, but I think you're right. Like broadly they shape him. But I just mean, we're making the same point. Broadly, if he came through now, I think he'd thrive is what I'm saying.
He also came in through the weirdest, like strangest era of English football. I think we've played this game before off camera where we've gone, hey, can name the side that England played in the World Cup against Costa Rica. It's a dead rubber, but it's like Phil Jones, Matthew Upson, Phil Jagielka, Ben Foster, Daniel Sturridge, Adam Lallana. Like, it's crazy. And he came through in this like slightly like misfitted era of English football.
And that was,
2014, 2012.
Everton were a little bit aimless, but also had name. Like, it was kind of like they didn't have enough of a name at that time. They weren't really meaningful enough to be anything. And going to Chelsea felt like the right idea.
Yeah, my theory with Barkley has always been he hasn't had a middle to his career. He had burst onto the scene, big start. But then was kind of like post his prime at Chelsea at like 24. Huh. And like did this thing in Nice, which didn't really work.
Which was very weird.
And he's now like in his like weird like retirement spell, but he's not. He's like 30.
He's doing his greatest hits in Vegas. Luton is our Vegas.
Yeah.
And he's basically like, and everyone goes and they go, yeah, that was good. Do you remember when he did My Heart Will Go On? And like,
was he at Liverpool ever?
No, I wish.
I'm making that up.
He would have been really good. He's an Everton player, obviously.
Are you sure he didn't have a 6-month loan spell? He strikes me as so.
I wish. Yeah.
He strikes me as, do you remember Maxi Rodriguez?
Oh, yeah.
That era of
but
like.
Don't slander Maxi Rodriguez. Like, Maxi Rodriguez is very good in his time at Liverpool. So, yeah. Just careful. You know what I mean?
Or Quaresma had a loan spell at Chelsea. That kind of role.
That was a real waste. I loved Quaresma. Quaresma was very much what. Ronaldo was what Quaresma was should have become.
Yes, which is a credit to Ronaldo.
And I think ultimately we go back to Ronaldo as the kind of the closing element of this. We go back to the headline that I opened the podcast with, which was the fact that Manchester United are looking to move on a lot of these players. I think the Ronaldo side drama, side play thing, whatever happened there, is still cast a bit of a shadow on the club because that dramatic era, which shaped so much of what United are now doing, and ultimately that financial misstep, and I think tactical misstep, has cost the club. At the point, it was very satisfying. But the analysis of Ronaldo is now the analysis of Casemiro, Varane, Sancho, everyone else. And the blueprint of breaking out of United, but also the blueprint of what United need to do with you, was very much, I think, set by the Ronaldo torching, whatever you want to call it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. The Ronaldo, like, it's a complicated one because at the time it was analysed in two ways. It was analysed in, aren't the club rubbish and look how good he's doing despite that? Or it was analysed as, he's making the club worse, they're better without him.
Which ultimately, I mean, they are better without him. But the problem is, it's similar to when Mourinho left United. There are still acolytes of the Ronaldo era. There are still Mourinho acolytes. Even if Ronaldo came back now, people would still go, brilliant. This is brilliant. It's exactly what we need.
Mm-mm-mm.
And I think that's where they're struggling to shift the ghost of Christmas past. And, you know, the ghost of Christmas future is, you know, Tiny Tim is dead.
Is Tiny Tim dead?
In this particular instance. And
fine.
I weep at the Muppets Christmas Carol when Tiny Tim is dead.
Because this would be a hell of a way to find out.
Sure. Sorry if I've ruined a Muppets Christmas Carol for anyone out there, but Gonzo and Rizzo make it through, is what I'm saying. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, there's kind of like this overarching idea of an exodus that has never quite happened because they almost killed the one at the top, but, you know, the other Vladimir Putins were ready to take over.
You had the breakup, but you sort of kept seeing each other as mates and then dated one of her friends and like, or someone in the friendship group.
Right.
And now it's like, you kind of felt like, oh, a new start, but it never really happened.
And that friend was always a better fit for you anyway.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like Garnacho and those kind of people. Although,
yeah, right.
You know, Garnacho is a fantastic dater, I'm sure.
I think Garnacho's probably, he's 21 and an Argentinian footballer in the Premier League.
He's probably married with three kids.
Yeah.
At least he should be without
hair. I
think
he does have a kid. Imagine my shock. Or, yeah, exactly.
If not, good luck to him. He seems like a lovely kid.
He does, doesn't he?
And he's incredibly talented. He's also scored goal of the season. One of the nominees for goal of the season.
I think it'll be tough to beat it.
It's a very pure strike from Alexis McAllister.
I know, but it's the backwards.
Nah, it's also just the fact it's an overhead kick. Yeah. And it's the fact it's a Manchester United red. It's weird because it'll be like Liverpool 7-0 against United.
As far as?
Who cares? It happened in a season when we were no good. We didn't win it.
Oh, well, I mean.
So it's cool. Good memory.
But we're going to talk about this probably Thursday. On the pod later this week.
Thursday.
But United-Liverpool coming up is.
United-Liverpool coming up on Sunday, 4:30.
They collectively went off.
They went for. But at the same time, Liverpool went, oh, bad time to. Because they might do something. United, it's one of those ones where everyone goes, United shouldn't win this. Do you remember? There was that piece of analysis where Graeme Souness literally said like, oh, these are the kind of games where Liverpool step up. And Rio and Gary, it was Gary Neville and someone. Yeah, it must've been Gary Neville and someone else from United were going, they openly like laughed at him. I think it was like 4-0 at halftime or something mental. That's my worry.
Yeah. Is that at Anfield? I think it is, yeah.
I think it is.
Because Gary Neville said it can eat you alive there.
And that's the other thing. I mean, I guess this season, if you're Liverpool, you want to eat Manchester United alive. And that's not even a joke.
Have you heard the rumour? This is such a stupid thing to say on the podcast because it's obviously not true. That Bruno Fernandes got booked intentionally to miss the Anfield.
That's not true.
It's not true.
It's not true.
But it did make me laugh. The idea that he was so upset about last year that he got like kicked the ball away or like petulant to like got booked for chatting to be like, I don't really fancy Anfield.
If that's the case, you should have brought this up at the top of the podcast to show the stinking rot which is within Manchester United.
It's not true.
We don't endorse that. Yeah, but at the same time, I'm very surprised that he wasn't on it. I'm very surprised he wasn't on that transfer list. Brilliant. Although probably these names in this book, there are three names in these envelopes, all of these names in these very books, none of them surprise me. And that's part of the problem, because a couple of months ago, you probably would have gone, give him until January, give him until next season. We need to get rid of Maguire, blah, blah, blah. Now it's like, we just need to clear house. I think Sir Jim worries me. In a good way, but for Manchester United, terrible for me. I think he's talking to all the right people. I think he's going to make a few really good signings. Don't like it.
Well, I'm looking forward to the Sancho winner at Old Trafford for Newcastle next year.
This has been fantastic. Thanks a lot, Jamie, for joining us. If you like Jamie's channel, then you can either look at the link in the description, or if you go to my channel, the homepage. Sorry, granddad. Go to msn.com. Yeah. Jamie's channel is featured on my channel. So it's like Lawrence McKenna, Jamie. Go look at it.
And your fingers, your subscribing fingers ready for the graphic,
which is coming very, very soon. We will see you guys again real soon right here on The Graphic, on the previous eras, the Lawrence McKenna channel, and indeed the Lawrence McKenna podcast. But you get what I'm saying. See you guys later. Much love. Bye.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.